Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Saturday, everybody. Back when we were planning our live show at the National Gallery of Art, which was a few months ago, we were brainstorming ideas about art history mysteries. And one of the topics that came up was Caravaggio and the murder of his rival, Ranuccio Tommasoni.
Obviously, we went in an entirely different direction from that for the show. We went with our mysteries of the color blue, but also prior hosts Sarah and Dublina had already done a whole episode on Caravaggio back in March of 2011, so we are sharing it today. Everyone enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And around this time last year, Katie and I did an episode on the artist Michelangelo. And it's a given that Michelangelo, he's one of the most famous artists in history. But according to the art historian Peter Sohm, Michelangelo has been surpassed in at least one head-to-head competition. And again, at least in terms of what's being written about him. Nobody's looking at the art show attendance or something here. But that raises the question, who is the upstart? Interestingly, it's another Michelangelo, except this one is named Michelangelo Merisi, and he's better known as Caravaggio.
And Sohm, who works at the University of Toronto, he has studied books, catalogs, and scholarly papers about the two men published in the last 50 years, everything kind of in that time range. And over time, the Caravaggio-related work did, in fact, outpace the writings on Michelangelo, especially since the mid-1980s or so.
Yeah, so Caravaggio is apparently quite popular right now. And if the obsession has been growing for the past 50 years, it's really reached new heights this year and last year, which was the 400th anniversary of the artist's death. But so far, we've had two art world controversies. This is in the past year. Two art world controversies, which have played out in really dramatic headline fashion. We're going to just read off a few of these headline, counter-headlined selections for you. One is from the BBC. Vatican reveals Caravaggio painting found in Rome.
And then later, Vatican paper dismisses own Caravaggio claims.
It's a little embarrassing. We have another one from the BBC. Church bones, quote, belong to Caravaggio, researchers say.
But also, unearthing doubts about Caravaggio's remains.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that one a little bit more because obviously it's an exhumation,
of course,
related point.
We're going to cover that.
There have also been two big exhibits, though, on the artists in the past year and this year as well. One was of Caravaggio's art at the Scuderia Quirinale, and the other was of his police trail at the Italian State Archives. And that's really the catch of this episode and probably the appeal of Caravaggio in general. He's not just a compelling figure because he's so masterful an artist, and he's not just compelling because he has this realist style that is well before his time, and he's not just interesting because he almost seems more like a photographer than a painter who lived centuries ago. He's bad. He's a really
bad
guy. Yeah, he's a bad boy. That's a good way to describe him. And the documents relating to his life are police documents and court documents, legal statements, things like that. He did leave quite a paper trail, and it does not really paint a pretty picture.
Yeah, and so I guess that new paper trail is what we'll focus on the most. But first, we'll go back to the beginning. He was born in 1571, and he was the son of an architect and a majordomo for the Marquis of Caravaggio. He was apprenticed later at age 11 to painter Simone Pietrzano in Milan. And it was sometime in his teens when he was sent off to Rome, and that's where he settles into this bohemian underworld. He's really poor and working for painters at that time who are less able than him. They're less talented.
Yeah, definitely struggling. And these are kind of the lost years as far as his record goes, which I guess with Caravaggio, that's a good thing. But they're not lost years as far as his work goes. He painted about 40 pieces during this period, including Boy with a Fruit Basket and The Young Bacchus. Those are probably two of his most famous works. And finally, in 1595, works like that must have caught the attention of certain eyes because he sets out on his own, and he's brought to the attention of Cardinal Francesco da Monte, who was a big shot in the papal court. So this is his in into the more elite world of Rome, and he's soon invited to live at the Cardinal's palace, and he's got room and board and all these commissions, and by 1597, he has a commission to decorate the Contrelli Chapel in Rome, which really puts him into the big league. He's only 24 years old, so he put in his difficult years early.
Yeah, and it's not a really totally smooth road all the way, though. His work for the chapel, which included scenes from the life of St. Matthew, they caused quite a stir at the time. And that's because these scenes he painted, they weren't idealized in any way. Matthew basically looks like a laborer off the street, a common person, not a very pretty saint.
Yeah, and from there on out, though, he does stick with these religious subjects, though. That's mostly what he's working on. But, I mean, like you mentioned, the Matthew thing gives a pretty good foreshadowing of this.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
His work isn't pretty. It's violent and it's dark stylistically. He supposedly would use a lantern hung in a dark studio to achieve this really dramatic lighting effect. I mean, I'm guessing probably most of you, if you're listening to this episode, you've seen Caravaggio paintings, but they often look like a photo where there's a big, strong beam of light shining on the subject from one direction. And another thing he would do is pick poor models. So maybe St. Matthew was right off the street. He would use laborers and just people he ran into, perhaps even prostitutes, which obviously that's going to sometimes caused some trouble for him, and sometimes his work was consequently rejected by its original commissioners.
Yeah, the Carmelites, for example, thought that his Death of the Virgin looked a little too common and also a little too dead.
Yeah, they didn't want her to look like a normal woman who had just died. They wanted her to be shooting straight up to heaven. And this kind of rejection, though, didn't really hurt Caravaggio's reputation. You would think that having your commissions rejected would be a bad thing. But private buyers were very eager to snatch up the rejected pieces, and his success really continued to grow. He was moving and mingling in the highest circles of Roman society, hanging out with cardinals, hanging out with princes. So it seemed like he had risen above that rough and tumble bohemian life that he started out in.
Yeah, but he never really totally left that hard knock life behind either. It's said that he was given to wrath and riot, and probably the best way to understand him might be to first look up some images of his art and then take a look at his police record, which we're going to get into a little bit right now.
It is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, actually. May 4th, 1598, for example, he's arrested for carrying a sword without a permit between 2 and 3 a.m.
November 19th, 1600, he sued over beating a man with a stick and cutting the guy's cape with his sword at a 3 a.m. brawl.
Then, October 2nd, 1601, he's accused of attacking a man with a sword and insulting him.
Yeah, adding insult to injury. April 24, 1604, he was accused of attacking a waiter over an artichoke-related dispute, which, because I kind of love that one so much, we're going to talk about it a little more in a second.
October 19th, 1604, arrested for pelting policemen with stones.
That's never good. May 28th, 1605, he's arrested for carrying a sword and a dagger, too, this time, without a permit.
July 29th, 1605, he's accused by a Vatican notary of striking him with a weapon from behind.
Yeah, so this gives you a pretty good idea of the kind of shenanigans that Caravaggio was up to. And the documents on view of the archives actually give us a closer look at some of these incidents. I mentioned the artichoke one. We have the waiter's statement, which it'll let you know that a lot is based on tone, and it's kind of hard to tell here what exactly happened. But here it goes. About 17 o'clock, lunchtime, the accused, together with two other people, was eating in the Moore's restaurant where I work as a waiter. I brought them 8 cooked artichokes, 4 cooked in butter and 4 fried in oil. The accused asked me which were cooked in butter and which fried in oil, and I told him to smell them, which would easily enable him to tell the difference. That's where tone is important. He got angry and, without saying anything more, grabbed an earthenware dish and hit me on the cheek at the level of my mustache, injuring me slightly. And then he got up and grabbed his friend's sword, which was lying on the table, intending perhaps to strike me with it. But I got up and came here to the police station to make a formal complaint. So, you know, a guy who's easy to anger, I guess.
Yeah, he seemed to get riled up pretty easily. He was even accused of throwing stones at his landlady's window after she sued him for cutting holes in his ceiling to make his paintings fit.
Yeah, that's the best part. So, you know, this is obnoxious behavior, violent, potentially lethal behavior, and carrying illegal swords around is not a good way to stay out of trouble. But he reached a new level May 28, 1606, when he killed a man. You can't really take that back. And the circumstances behind this murder are kind of interesting. The deceased was Ranuccio Tomasini, and he was murdered on a tennis court in Rome. And so you've probably heard that because the location was a tennis court, the dispute was somehow related to a game of tennis, or some historians have suggested that it was related to a dispute over a woman. But either way, something that happened in the heat of the moment, you just let your passions get to you and get into a fight, and then Ranuccio is suddenly dead. But court documents from the time show that it really looked a lot more like an organized war, not just this argument that started suddenly.
Right. For one thing, it's not exactly a tennis court where this happens. It's a palacorda court in the Campo Marzio area, which was Caravaggio's neighborhood. Palacorda is kind of like tennis, except there's somehow a string involved. We're not really sure how it works.
I'd love like an explanation of palacorda for any still practicing sport enthusiasts.
Yes, email us. The other thing was there were 8 men who participated in this fight, and they were chosen ahead of time. They weren't just random onlookers. So as you said, it wasn't just in the heat of the moment. It wasn't people who got mad about something that happened to a game and decided to become part of this. It was planned.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Caravaggio himself was there with three other guys. One was a captain in the papal army, again showing he does have friends in high places. And one of his friends was also badly injured and arrested after the fact. And it's during this guy's trial where it comes out that the fight was probably started over a gambling debt. So something that they could mull over for a little while and get their friends together. But Caravaggio is injured in this. But he escapes. He's not injured bad enough that he's arrested. He gets out of Rome. He's terribly concerned about what will happen to him, and rightly so, because he's condemned to death in absentia by Pope Paul V. So the first place he goes is to the estate of the Marquis of Caravaggio's relative, so a friend of his dad's friend, essentially. From there, he goes to Naples in early 1607, and he starts painting again. And just remember, throughout his entire flight, he's still painting, which I think is so interesting. I mean, obviously, it's partly to make a living, but that you would still have it in you when you're running for your life.
Right. And he has to keep moving. He moves on from Naples to Malta, where he not only keeps painting, but he's received into the Order of Malta, which is kind of confusing because it's something that requires papal permission.
Yeah. And the Pope has just condemned him to death. I think that's interesting. And of course, all the while, his friends back in Rome were working to get a papal dispensation. That's the only way he could be pardoned. But I would kind of want those files to be handled in reverse order, I think, and get my life spared before I am received into the Order of Malta. But either way, he's expelled from the Order of Malta not that long after, and he's jailed. He escapes from jail and goes to Syracuse in Sicily in October 1608. And from there, he goes on to Messina and then to Palermo, all the while still working. And it's kind of interesting. Art historians have commented on this work because obviously you're going to look at anything done under such adverse circumstances. But apparently he really simplifies things and scales it down, but it's still just as skilled and well executed as ever.
The only way for him to really get a rest is to get the Pope's pardon at this point. But Caravaggio has friends in high places, like we mentioned, so they've been working on this. Seems like a pardon might actually be on the horizon finally. Caravaggio ends up moving to Naples again, but when he's there, he's attacked at the door of an inn and horribly disfigured on his face. People even get reports that he's dead. By July 1610, though, he's finally well enough to sail again, so he sails for Rome, but he's arrested along the way, and the boat with all his stuff leaves him behind while he's in jail. So he's trying to chase down this boat. He gets as far as Porto Ercole, where he dies at 38, so he never reaches the boat. Never gets his pardon. While he's alive, he is actually pardoned 3 days later after his death.
Yeah, it arrives 3 days later. So, that's sad to say the least. And it's interesting, though, but the circumstances around his death are appropriately controversial, too. He's often believed to have died alone on the beach, which is terribly depressing and probably seems plausible, right? But his first biographer, Giovanni Bioni, sort of made things even worse. He painted a picture saying, quote, "Finally, having arrived in a place on the beach, he was put in bed with a high fever and having no human help, within a few days, he died as miserably as he had lived." I think that makes it worse. It makes it seem like not only does he die alone on the beach, somebody puts him in bed and then leaves him.
And then abandons him.
Yeah.
Then he dies alone.
Definitely taking it up a notch. But his death was really not quite that dramatic. Records from the archives exhibit show that Caravaggio was found delirious on the beach, but then he was taken to the hospital and he died there 2 days later, presumably not entirely abandoned by everyone at the hospital. It's still unclear, though, what killed him.
Right. Maybe it was malaria. Could have been that. Maybe the Knights of Malta, or maybe even the Pope. I mean, during his successful, though very stressful, career on the run, he was kind of afraid that papal hitmen were after him.
Yeah, so it was a concern of Caravaggio's, at least. But we also have to address those bones that were supposedly Caravaggio's and identified as his last summer. First of all, though, why would this even be an issue? You know, presumably an artist as famous as Caravaggio would have a monument and a marker set up immediately after his death. But even though it's pretty hard to believe, after Caravaggio's death, he faded into obscurity almost immediately. I mean, he had an influence on later artists, but people pretty much forgot who he was until he had this big resurgence at the beginning of the 20th century. So that's why we knew he definitely died in Porto Ercole, but we didn't know exactly where he was. In 2010, Silvio Vincetti, who is the president of a private organization that seems to go around and ID the remains of illustrious deceased Italians such as Dante, announced that his team had identified bones of Caravaggio from the Porto Ercole crypt.
Yeah, and you may be asking, how did they do this? So here's a little bit about their method. They examined skeletons at the crypt, eliminating ones that didn't fit Caravaggio's specs, basically. They carbon dated things down to one skeleton, and then they tested that sample against the DNA from families who were named Marisi or Mauricio from Caravaggio. So they did this basically because Caravaggio didn't have any kids of his own, and the committee couldn't find his actual descendants, his siblings' descendants, I should say. So they kind of had to take their best guess.
Yeah, and that's one thing that makes people a little uncomfortable with this finding. But the group also concluded that the presumed Caravaggio skeleton had suffered from lead poisoning, which would also add up for an artist at the time, had suffered from syphilis, and had died from sunstroke. But art historians have been really, really skeptical of this claim, to say the least. The New York Times article that we mentioned earlier had quotes from quite a few art historians with varying tone of dismissal, but I included one from Tommaso Montanari of the University of Naples, who said, quote, "In the 400th anniversary of Caravaggio's death, this committee has concocted a compelling discovery, thinking it will attract tourists. It's all very depressing." So, yikes.
Yeah.
Sir.
Not very confidence inspiring.
No, not at all. So, I guess I'm hoping that we'll find out more in the 401st anniversary of Caravaggio's death, because I don't like my exhumations to be depressing and up in the air.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this Saturday Classic. If you have heard any kind of email address or maybe a Facebook URL during the course of the episode, that might be obsolete. It might be doubly obsolete because we have changed our email address again. You can now reach us at historypodcast@iheartradio.com, and we're all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge the season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.